I was looking around for ideas for a novel to be working on, and I read an obituary of a man called Henry Molaison. And for most of his life, Henry Molaison was known as Patient HM. And his story, just briefly, was that he was born in Connecticut in the early part of the 20th century. And at the age of... He had very severe epilepsy, which came on as a child and then worsened as he got older. And at the age of 27, he was unable to work, and so he underwent an experimental brain operation, essentially, a procedure on his brain. And the surgeon removed the parts of his brain which were thought to be causing his epilepsy. And the operation was successful in that it did solve his epilepsy problem. But what they hadn't realized at the time was that part of the brain is also responsible for forming new memories. So essentially, when he was 27, after this operation, he stopped forming any new memories. And he died at the end of 2008, so he was 82 when he died. And I was just struck by this idea, this kind of thought of how odd it must have been, to say the least, for him, kind of being that at that age and not having any memories since the age of 27. So I was just struck by this this kind of thought and this image of how important our memories are to us and our sense of who we are. So really, it all kind of sprang from that, reading that obituary of Henry Molaison.
When we first meet Christine, our protagonist, we know as little about her as she does herself.
Yeah.
She's waking up, and actually the first few pages, we, the reader, don't know quite what's happening.
Yeah.
We don't even know if the narrator is male, female, or what.
Yes.
And I wonder, was there a challenge for you to write a novel where the lead doesn't know much, and did that become a challenge for you to unspooling the information that we, as we read, get?
It did, yeah. I mean, I remember as I was writing it, I was occasionally, I would think it would have been so much easier to have written this in the third person, so to have not written this from inside this woman's head, if you like. But I think it would have been a very different book had I chosen to do that. And I very much wanted to place the reader with Christine as she's experiencing these things, and as she's having these these doubts and these thoughts. So it was a very deliberate decision to write it in the first person from her point of view, but it was a challenge. And I remember a few times that I would write whole scenes or whole chapters almost and then realize, oh, but she doesn't know any of this, does she? So I'd have to delete it all and kind of backtrack. But it was a challenge, but it was fun.
Well, I was wondering about that because in order to maintain our readers' interest and our ability to buy into the story, mm-hmm. you have to be very careful about what Christine can know and when she can know it.
Yeah.
Did you have a flow chart or something you kept track of?
Not really, no. I write a bit more organically than that, if that makes sense. It was more I wouldn't say trial and error, because that makes it sound like I didn't know what I was doing. But I did kind of like feel my way through the book, if you like. And towards the middle part, I kind of sat down and I planned out a good chunk of it all, so I could keep everything in check and keep all my plates spinning. But I was very keen not to plan it too much at the beginning, because I kind of like to write a bit more, freestyle.
And I want to be very careful. I hardly want to give anything away that happens in the book.
Yeah.
So we're going to just skirt many details here.
Mm-hmm.
But did you know the ending early on?
Fairly early, yeah. It was interesting. When I read the obituary of Henry Molaison, the opening scene pretty much came to me complete. And so I decided I'd just start to write it and see where it led me. And probably, I don't know, probably a month or 2 months later, the final scene came to me as well. Again, fairly complete. So after that, it was just a case of sort of plotting my way between the two. But I always knew I wanted to write a book that wasn't just a sort of meditation on memory, if you like. I wanted to write an exciting book, a thriller, and a book that people would hopefully read and want to know what's happening and what the story is and what the truth is, and a book with kind of mystery and intrigue, if you like. So I kind of I had that plan fairly early on, but what form that would take, I wasn't sure until a few weeks into the writing.
There is an element, a device in this book before I go to sleep that allows Christine to kind of, even though her memory is not refreshed every morning, that kind of lets her advance her story, and that's this journal.
Mm.
When did you come up with that as a, and it works wonderfully.
Thank you.
As a way to advance the narrative of the story and keep our character Christine somewhat in the know of what happened.
Yeah, I mean that came fairly early on. It had to really because I, as I say, I'd chosen to write this story about this woman who doesn't remember things, and I'd chosen to write it from her point of view, and so. I was faced with several choices, and I could have written, just to clarify, the memory loss that she has is that she remembers things for a day, but then loses things as she sleeps. So I could either write the whole story so it all took place within one day, or else I had to find another way of not making the book repetitive and allowing her to have a sense of forward momentum, if you like, and for her to be learning more things and to carry that knowledge through with her into the rest of the story. So that's how the journal idea came, that she discovers that she's been keeping a journal for the past few weeks, and that's allowed her to have some semblance of memory, I suppose, because she can reread things that have happened to her and have a basis on which to build, I suppose. So it kind of came out of necessity, but fairly early on in the writing of it, yeah.
It inspired for me a sense of claustrophobia, because I think inevitably, if you read this book before I go to sleep, you begin to, I did anyway, begin to think about what it would be like if I woke up every day thinking it was 1985.
Yeah.
And what had happened and what I accomplished. And it would be a very sad condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there was this sense of claustrophobia in that. As you're reading along with Christine and learning, there's this sense of sadness that tomorrow morning you're going to wake up and much of this will not be, you know, you'll have to start all over.
Yeah, yeah. It was a deliberate decision, really, again, for me to make it a fairly, to have a small cast of characters and a fairly limited worldview, I suppose, because I think someone in that situation probably would have a limited worldview, and so... I wanted to kind of create an air of suspense, actually, almost like a Hitchcock kind of thing, where it's not a kind of a huge range of characters, one of whom may or may not be the murderer, if you like. Although, you know, that's not really what's happening with this book. But I did want to create this kind of claustrophobic atmosphere, although hopefully still make it entertaining. To read in a page turner.
Did this make you think about your own memory or memories or how memories are created or lost at all?
Absolutely, yeah. I terrified myself writing this book. I was just very, very intrigued by the whole notion of memory and how important it is to us and how important it is to our sense of self and to our sense of who we are. You know, I mean, I think we take for granted the fact that we know our own story, if you like, and we know our own history. And so we know how we've got to be in the situation that we're in, whatever situation that may be. And so I became very intrigued when I started thinking about how it might feel to not have that sense of your own past and that sense of your own history. And to kind of, I likened it in a way to, it was almost as though my character went to sleep at the age of, I don't know, 18 or something, you know, young, free and single and looking forward to her life and wondering about where she was going to end up and what her job would be and what she would achieve in her life and who she would marry and all those things. And then essentially for her, she kind of wakes up and she's in her late 40s and she finds that many of those decisions have been made and many of those things that she's already done or many of the doors that she hoped to go through have maybe closed forever. And it was a very, it was a frightening kind of thing to think about that happening, to have lost whole chunks of your life with no way of getting them back and no way of knowing how you got to be where you are.
Well, yeah, she walks into the middle of the movie that is her life.
Mm.
And then as she finds out, as she goes along, fewer and things that she thinks she knows, her occupation, her family. I mean, things can change for her dramatically in a second.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to play with this idea of truth as well, of sometimes... It may be almost kinder to not be entirely honest with somebody. I'm thinking here, again, without giving away anything of the plot, hopefully, but I'm thinking here of if there's a painful truth in somebody's life, if something terrible has happened that causes them to be upset, if that person forgets that, is it the best thing to remind them of that thing because it's true, or sometimes is it better to just let them believe otherwise?
And you do that very well because it plays with the whole notion of trust. And you can certainly understand, because we're learning things as she is, you can understand why perhaps a person didn't tell her something.
Absolutely.
And it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And what also really intrigued me as well was, as I was writing the book, I was thinking, I'm writing about a person with very severe amnesia, and that's fairly rare. It doesn't happen all the time. And yet, the more I thought about it and the more I spoke to other people about the work I was doing, the more I realized that memory loss happens all too frequently, particularly with people who suffer from Alzheimer's and other dementias. So although the kind of condition I'm writing about is very extreme and rare, the actual condition of someone with a memory loss problem is fairly common.
And you have fun at times in the book too with, it's not just what you don't know about your life, but she is astonished to see how small the computer is in the office, and what's this little thing that's in the purse that's ringing, and a lot has happened in the time
that
she can't remember.
Absolutely, yeah. And I actually had to make a decision not to go too far down that route, because I was imagining that it was around the mid-80s when she kind of lost her memories. And if you consider that to now, so much has changed. So even TVs, have completely changed shape. And there's the whole internet has happened. And I had to make a decision of how much of that to go into, because I could have written a whole book about the shock of just how much technology has changed in those years. So I had to kind of limit that. Really.
Yeah, sort of like the series Life on Mars played with that a lot.
Absolutely, yeah.
I believe the movie rights have been optioned. Is that correct?
They have, yeah. It's really exciting. I read an early draft of the script just a few weeks ago, and it's looking pretty good. So I'm incredibly excited about that.
And I believe you're working on your second novel?
That's right. Yeah, I'm working on my next book. I can't really say too much about it.
Sure, sure.
it's a bit of a kind of fragile process for me. But it's another psychological thriller. I'm interested in those books that make you want to try and work out what's going on and make you want to turn the page. And I've always loved story. So it's another thriller. It's another psychological thriller. It doesn't really operate in the same world, if you like, as Before I Go to Sleep. So I've moved slightly away from the whole claustrophobia of that book, and it's a slightly more expansive book, really. But I think my preoccupations are still there. I'm still interested in identity and how malleable identity could actually be, and also what so-called ordinary or normal people are capable of if they're placed in extraordinary situations. So kind of the same preoccupations and topics are there, although I'm exploring them from a slightly different angle, I suppose.
Finally, you've worked for the National Health Service.
That's right.
For some time. And from what I've read of your biography, you at some point said, okay, I've got to spend more time writing. What was the inertia that made you want to write that much more?
I think really it was just, I've always loved writing. I've always written to some extent, and I always had it in my mind as a kind of a childhood ambition to have a book published that I'd was sort of seeing disappear into the distance, I suppose. And as I became more and more senior in the health service in London, in the UK, I found that ambition was getting further and further away. And I faced a bit of a crossroads in a way, in that I was faced with a choice of I could either move up in my career, if you like, in the health service. But I knew that if I did that, I would not have time or energy anymore to really devote serious energy to my writing. So I had that kind of decision to make of which way I wanted to jump, if you like. I didn't want to completely say goodbye to my childhood ambition, and I decided that no, I didn't, and it was time for me to devote a bit more time to my writing and seeing if I could make a go of it. So I made a few changes in my life, and Before I Go to Sleep is the result, really.
The name of the book is Before I Go to Sleep. People can learn more if they want at sjwatson-books.com.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations, and best of luck on the second book.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great to speak to you.